You are listening to Jackson Scanberg's Smooth Sailing. Tonight's broadcast featuring Sophia Pajawis was recorded on April 17th, 2021.
Let the music play on, play on. Everybody sing, everybody dance. Lose yourself in wild romance. We're going to party, carambo, fiesta, forever. Come on and sing along. We're going to party, carambo, fiesta, forever. Come on and sing along.
And welcome to the return of Smooth Sailing. I am Captain Jack, and this is Smooth Sailing on WJEV Radio 101.1 FM. It is a beautiful sunny day out in Milwaukee at the moment. I was told to take a moment of silence for one of the fellow WJEV broadcasters, Bill, who has, from my reports, died from an unknown projectile soaring through his window. Quite an odd scenario. Please have a moment of silence for Bill. Okay, that's enough. Moving on, today's interviewee will be Sophia. Sophia, can you hear me?
Yep, here you go.
Oh, I cannot hear you. Let me boost you up.
Is this better?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
So, Sophia, what do you... You are a engineer in training, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm doing mechanical engineering.
What made you choose to be a mechie out of all the other assortments of engineering that exist?
I'll be honest, it's only because of my hobbies. Like, I always did stuff related to aeronautics, just, you know, building RC airplanes and stuff like that. And mechanical engineering is just general enough, so it doesn't matter where I get, like, hired. It'll be close enough to kind of what I want to do.
That is very interesting. So you plan on moving from job to job a lot then? As you want something broad, or do you just want to have something broad so you can more easily get in anywhere?
More so that it's broad, so I can just kind of choose what kind of field I'm more interested at the time. Because I was thinking maybe at first like aeronautics, but I don't. It's not a very like a wide field, so I can always kind of get into any general engineering job, hopefully.
What made you so interested in aeronautics?
I'm not really sure, to be honest. Like, my parents worked, or my mom worked at the airport as a kid, so I kind of always was close to airplanes, but it's not really the airport that draws me to it. It's, I don't know, it's just something about flight, I guess?
Being able to be a bird.
Yeah, pretty much.
Have you ever flown in a plane before?
I've done, obviously from vacations, you take airliners, I have done a couple of flights in, like, smaller, like, Cessnas and stuff like that, and, very, very limited amounts of, like, drone flying. Obviously, I wasn't in the drone, but it's close enough.
What in specific, do you have any fond memories of the smaller aircraft, sessions that you were in? Was there anything cool about that stood out to you?
It's nothing, like, out of the ordinary. It's just very, like, it's almost like a ride, I guess, like a roller coaster, I would say. Like, obviously, it's not on rails, and it's a bit more dangerous, but, I don't know, it's I don't know, actually. It's an, I guess, like an experience or a ride. There was one moment during one of the flights, because it was supposed to be kind of a, it was sponsored by a organization called EAA, which is the Experimental Aircraft Association, and they do some, like, planning around Oshkosh in Michigan. And so they had, like, some flights set up for, like, to get people into flying, and during the one point you kind of steer around the plane a little bit, they kind of, obviously the other person has the other control stick, but they still kind of, like, let you do some of it, and I think that kind of sparked as well to the from like what love of piloting, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of flying and completely off topic, Zofia, there is a fly in the room where I am broadcasting from right now. What should I do about it?
Can you open up your windows to like let it out? Or
no,
not really?
Unfortunately, I don't think I am allowed to do that.
Swat it?
Does this fly deserve to die? What
I knew
this
was a morality question.
To...
I knew it.
What has this fly done to wrong me, besides existing? And also landing in my drink, I think.
Well, there you go, it landed in your drink. Why do you want to get rid of it, then?
I don't really want to get rid of it. It's watching me, though. I see it. It's staring at me. It just, like, bobbed its head.
Mr. Scanberg, have you considered asking the fly to leave nicely?
Mr. Fly, would you leave nicely? Oh, he's skittering around. No. No, he's not gone. He's on the window sill.
Peace is never an option.
Peace is always an option, Mr. Bilkey. John Bilkey, everyone. The operator... President, CEO of WJEB Radio 101.1 FM, and
also
President of MSOE Libertarians.
Also, esteemed bingo man.
Yes, and
yes, I'm honored. Thank you, sir.
Sophia, I am aware that you are, a bit of a tabletop gaming enthusiast as well.
I would call myself that, yeah.
When did that start? Can you pinpoint the first, like, instance you knew that it existed?
I think it was definitely in middle school. I'm trying to remember if it was a friend or a webcomic that specifically started it off. Either way, I got into, I think it was a friend. Yeah, it was a friend that they, for a birthday of another friend's, we were going to play D&D. And I got really excited about it. Like, I started reading up during school and stuff like that, reading up on it. It was really, really, I liked it a lot. Like, in middle school, it was like, it took up a good chunk of my social life. It was just, like, D&D and stuff like that. Though I didn't, you know, it was kind of hard to host it, because we lived in an apartment. So, like, I kind of had to go to other people's places to, you know, play it. But, yeah, it was a big part in middle school.
Do you have any fond memories of just random things? Because when you play these story role-playing games and you're only, what, 11, 12, or 13, no one really knows what makes a good story.
Yeah. I'll be honest, I don't have any, like, crazy memories or anything like that, or any stories. My memory isn't really great.
The fly's coming at me. Okay, we're good. It just swirled above me. It swooped down for an airstrike. Okay, return.
So I don't really have any stories that would, like, I guess that aren't really relevant. Just my memory's pretty much shot from my childhood, so I could tell you the... I think I know the plot of some of the campaigns, but they're pretty mundane. Like, one of them was just in a dungeon, and we didn't get any farther because there was just one guy who came, and after he had to leave early or whatever, and that was pretty much it for the day. And another was... it was in a library, and the most notable thing about it was... there was a kobold character that we just absolutely worshipped for a while. It was only like two sessions, but it was just like a recurring character, and I guarantee it slowed down the DM just trying to be like, let's get on with the story. But no, the kobold.
What was so special about this kobold?
I actually have no clue. I don't think there was anything special other than being an enemy. It was the last enemy of the encounter, and then we all started just brainstorming up like different weird characteristics of the kobold, and then we just got attached to it.
Okay. I guess I also want to just say, do you remember the first time you ever encountered someone that could be described as the archetype? First of all, have you ever heard of the archetype of the that guy?
I think I know what you mean. Honestly, I haven't had any like really that guy people in games.
Really?
It's not that I didn't play it with that many people. Like, it was mostly just, like, one group of friends, and that was about it. And, I never really had that guy.
Did you ever have, like, a large group of people, or was it, like, the same?
It was usually, like, 4 or 5 people. Sometimes you would have, like that friend's friends, so you'd kind of have some new people coming in, but everybody was pretty decent.
That drastically differs from my experience.
Yeah, I know there's a bunch of stories like online, and obviously you have some, so...
Well,
I don't know, it's odd.
I was just talking about the player count stuff, because I think at the lowest point, the pool of players that I could pull from was still, like, somewhere between 8 to 10 people. And at the height, it was around 25 people I could probably pull from to be players.
Huh, that's a lot more than I wasn't very social as a kid. I mean, still not super social, but yeah.
Well, first of all, I have to ask, were you a first generation tabletop player, or did you have parents or guess it could even be grandparents at this point who have played tabletop?
No, not really. My parents are both Polish, and I think my dad might have been his youth, but I seriously doubt anybody in my family's done anything like any tabletop at all.
Yeah, it's where I grew up. There was quite a few people who were like third, like somewhere between second and third generation, like D&D players. Like my favorite DM I've ever had was a second generation DM, and he was still running on first edition D&D that was like super homebrewed, so it was mechanically balanced and fun first edition, and it was great. Fantastic.
Also, how do you get a third generation DM? That's very interesting.
Well, that would be if like a So, his name was Adam. Adam was a second-generation DM. If either Adam eventually had a kid, and they became a DM, that would be third generation. Or, as they already exist, and I couldn't ever confirm, I think there was this one kid named, I can't remember his name. I'm sorry. I'm blanking whoever you are who's not listening to this podcast. It's where, as an adult, their grandpa, who's like 40, got into the D&D train, like, in the Gygax generation, when he was Gygax's age. That's how you could have a third generation DM.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, because, like, D&D, it's not that old, so somebody would, you're not gonna be, you know, the first generation of, you know, the grandparent couldn't play it as a kid. So, I was just wondering.
Well, they do exist. Like, there's quite a lot of people who grew up playing first edition in the 80s and are still in the hobby. My favorite physics teacher started playing D&D in the 80s, and he still plays tabletop to this day, though it's mostly Pathfinder.
Because, like, when did the first generation, or first edition D&D, what was that? That was, like, 80-something? I don't remember.
That was late 80s.
Yeah.
Mid to late 80s. And that was, in evolution of, wargaming. So, like, Warhammer and old-school, like, battle miniature games evolved into D&D, which is why it's so grid-based.
Yeah, and then also, don't people do wargaming for, like Civil War and, like, other, like, war, like, World War II miniatures?
Yeah.
And stuff like that?
Yeah, stuff like that is what it evolved from. And I don't think you were in the... I was tempted to run first edition earlier this year. And I don't think you were there, but first edition is very dated, very sexist, and very racist.
You mean, like, lore-wise, or...?
Like, from a mechanical basis. And D&D is racist from a mechanical bias anyways, because all the races have, stat bonuses that imply something about them, right?
Yeah, I get the racist part. How do you be sexist? Does a woman do, like...
Women couldn't... Women had maximum stat caps.
Oh my god.
And, women had maximum stat caps. And they couldn't be certain races. They couldn't be certain classes, and certain races couldn't be certain classes. But if you played a human, you could be anything and be completely uncapped.
That's great.
So, like, if you wanted to be, like, a dwarf druid, you just couldn't. You just plain couldn't in first edition, because that's how it worked.
I mean, I kind of understand, like a race not, No, I can't even justify it. That's stupid.
Well, it's because it was based on the Tolkien fantasy, like, ideas, but it's a storytelling game, so it implies that you're going to tell the same story every time unless you start breaking down those boundaries and diversifying what you can do.
How many like games do you think in the first edition was just like a recap of Lord of the Rings? Because like if you're basing the lore off it so much, like
I'm not sure a lot.
Really?
Here's the thing. Thematically, good beating evil is a big thing in first edition. Like, good fighting evil is something tangible, because the alignment system had serious mechanical failures if you failed to live up to certain things. Like, in order to be a paladin, you have to be lawful good. That's the most common thing everyone knows about. But if you failed that, or you failed to, like, be a good priest, you would be stripped to essentially a negative fighter, which is a fighter without any of the good stuff fighter gets.
Huh. So you could essentially fail to be your class.
Yes. And classes had stat requirements as well, so let's say you beat the pure racism of vanilla first edition, and you're able to... Yeah. One second. Oh.
Prepare to set sail with your captain, Jackson Scanberg, on his talk show, Smooth Sailing, Fridays and Saturdays at 6 p.m. on WJEB.
Okay. I am doing... Sorry, folks. I am doing some weird things for this one, because I do not have my proper mic, so I am using my wireless earbuds. Ooh. They're not Raycons. and I just had to take a break. Next time we will go on proper break. We can edit this out in post, so pretend like the conversation never ended. Okay. So, Sophia.
Yeah?
Going back to what I was talking about, in first edition, classes had stat requirements as well. So, even if you overcame the race wolf around tree, you still had to overcome actually rolling well enough.
So you would choose your character before you rolled for stats? Or are you talking about just, like, in general building a character?
In general building a character.
Fun.
It was a interesting system, I guess.
I think it's a good system if you're, like, if you don't know what character you want, so, like, it's building a life path, I guess. But if you have... How I build characters, basically, I just have an idea for them, like, I kind of, not a progression, but just, like, what gimmick do I have this time? And this system probably just wouldn't work for that at all.
Speaking of gimmicks, Samson. You want to talk about Samson for a second?
Samson, oh my god.
Can you please explain Samson to the viewers?
Oh, jeez. Okay, so... Jackson and I and a couple other friends are working on a I'm DMing Cyberpunk.
And what is Cyberpunk for the people that don't know what it is?
Cyberpunk is a 90s tabletop RPG that the new Cyberpunk 2077 game is based off of. It's a futuristic post-apocalyptic, yeah. United States and just in general the whole world, but like it's based in California, Night City, and it's very interesting, actually, it applies to the modern world a lot. But so in the world you can be like cyborgs. They're not very common. They're very expensive to just go through the surgeries. And I remember you were for Samson, you were looking through the booklet of cybernetic packages, and one of them was Samson, which is the construction cyborg, I think. And he looks like one of the Koopalings, the one with the balls. Is it Roy? Yeah, he looks like Roy.
He looks like Roy.
The other cyborgs have like cool names like Dragoon or something, but Samson.
Oh, we're gonna have to go on commercial break for a second. We'll be right back.
Go ahead.
You're listening to 101.1 FM WJEV.
Milwaukee's Classic Country, 10-4.
And we're back. Welcome back to WJEV Radio, 101.1 FM. This is Smooth Sailing with Captain Jack and Sophia.
Hello.
We are talking about Cyberpunk, the 90s tabletop game, not the new video game. And we were just discussing Samson and cybernetic packages.
I think the idea for Samson I had was to be like, oh, this is a construction worker, so like, what's a typical like union worker's name? And then I guess Samson fit? It's spelled odd, too. Is it Samson, or...
It's just spelled straight like Samson. Like, S-A-M-S-O-N. Samson.
Sam. Why would you name that? Like, it's... It doesn't make sense to me. It's such an awful name for, like, marketing. Or, like, who had the idea for Samson?
I don't know. I think it sounds pretty reasonable. Do you think Samson has any feelings? Like, I know he's a cyborg, but does he still have human emotions?
Yeah, so how most cyborgs work in Cyberpunk, I'll get to the exception later, is basically it's just a person, like the brain's still somewhere floating around, still there, and like some other body parts. Kind of like the RoboCop, where it's just mostly... It's mostly robotic, but some parts are human, the important bits. And so they do still have emotions, and there's actually a big issue in Cyberpunk where, not a big issue, but, like, cyborgs are actually just, like, discriminated against because, like, they're fully robotic, even though, like, the whole genre of Cyberpunk is pretty transhumanist, where it's like, oh, yeah, modify your body as much as you want, who cares? And, so they do have human feelings, and they're discriminated against, and actually there is another cybernetic package, which is it's meant to look like a human, like it has, like, skin over it. It's modeled loosely off of, what is it? Who was the actor in Terminator? Schwarzenegger. You can kind of tell from the drawing, and it's very, very interesting. And the last exception to the, I guess, sentience rule is the Dragoon, which is, like, the big bad cyborg, where it takes so much of your humanity to, like, be in it. They have to actively sedate you during, like, when you're in the suit, and they'll kind of pull you out, so you're kind of, like, a husk of yourself when you're not in the suit, and it's, like, used for military operations.
So, going back to the human emotions that these robots can have, minus the Dragoon, as you just said, do you think it's possible for, I don't know, a cyborg to cheat on... For a cyborg to cheat on a woman?
I mean, yeah? I don't see it, like, there's nothing stopping them.
Do you think it's, perfectly acceptable for a backstory for a character to have to have his wife taken away, or his wife ran away with Samson?
You know, I don't remember the term for it specifically, but there is a term for people who are sexually attracted to, like, machinery. I should remember the term, because there was, like, a weird 80s body horror Japanese movie specifically about it. I think it was The Metallophile or something like that. So I guess that's reasonable.
But should I do it?
Sure. I mean, also, there's no real downsides.
You mentioned we are having this game tomorrow. You, myself, and a few other people. What's it going to be on?
What do you mean by what's it going to be on? Like the plot, or?
I suppose. One second, we're going on commercial. It appears I accidentally muted the buffer, but that's all right.
Okay, so we're back.
And we are back with Smooth Sailing on WJEB Radio 101.1 FM. This day is dedicated to the memory of the former host, Bill. Moment of silence once again. Moment of silence over. Okay, going back to Samson. No, we were past Samson. We were talking about what's going to happen tomorrow.
So basically, I think Cyberpunk is... You can tell any story you want. Like, nothing's written out for it. But I feel like the genres which really go well with Cyberpunk are, like, action, kind of mystery, almost kind of crime thriller is the word I'm looking for, right? Like, you're dealing with both sides are criminals, and they're kind of, you know, getting at each other, and then the hero's either on, like, on one side, or they're getting in between. So the plot for this one is going to be, or the first session, at least, is going to be, the team is going to be raiding a restaurant, and the idea is that they've been hired out by a mafia, and they're going to investigate the restaurant because there's a large amounts of drugs coming out of it, and basically it's the owner of the drug owner is basically just going to be like kind of scare him, I guess, because they're stepping in the mafia's bounds, I guess. If that's
how
they explain it.
That's fine. That makes sense. So, what is this fast food restaurant? Is it like a futuristic McDonald's?
Oh, I didn't think about that. It was just going to be a restaurant. I don't know. There's not really that many high quality foods anymore in Cyberpunk. It's mostly just like, yeah, fast food, or like, you've seen Blade Runner, right? It's like the noodle shop on the...
Yeah,
it's pretty much just basic food.
Can you add a ball pit?
A ball pit in...
Yeah, can you add a ball pit in this restaurant? And a jungle gym?
Are you... You want the final showdown to be in the McDonald's play place? The giant tube thing?
Yeah, and you can have it dressed up with like that crappy, jungle, like, setting paint and decorations they try and theme it to.
See, so, like, half the restaurant is, like, run-down actual restaurant, and the other half is just, like, wallpapered over, like cartoon monkeys and jungles and stuff like that. Yeah, totally.
And Samson's there.
Is Samson there?
Yeah.
Is Samson a fan of the ball pit?
No. I don't want Samson. I don't want him in my life again. Oh, we kind of got off topic here.
A little bit.
So, I noticed in the books, when I was going through the setting, there are, like, giant blimps and airships that exist?
Yeah. I think the general term for them are called AVs, or aeronautical vehicles. Basically, just, like, flying cars. They're not super common, and, like, regular cars do still exist, but, like, the rich and powerful, and, like, militaries use them.
No, I'm, like, talking proper blimps.
I think I remember seeing a blimp or two, but, like...
I saw you could buy, like, war blimps, and I just looked at it, and it's like, have we learned nothing from the Hindenburg?
You're right, there are war blimps. There are. Huh. What do you plan to do with the war blimp?
I can't. I can't afford it. It's like $50 million.
I mean, what? Yeah, it's a war blimp, so of course it would be. It's massive, and it has guns on it. It's great.
As someone who's interested in aeronautics, what can you tell me about blimps?
Blimps are pretty cool, but the reason we don't, they're not, like, the mode of transport for today is kind of interesting. The Hindenburg was one big thing where, like, you know, a bunch of people died because a static shock. The idea is it's a static shock. We don't really know what happened because it wasn't in, like, the 20s or something. I don't remember.
It was in the build-up. The Hindenburg was a German military general in World War I who became the president of the Weimar Republic. So, 20s.
Mm-hmm, 20s. Mm-hmm. Actually... Is it 20s? I think it's a little bit later, because I do remember the company that ran the Hindenburg, I believe, was taken over, nationalized by the German Third Reich. And what they would, there's a really interesting story with Nazis and blimps. It's great. So basically, the guy who.
Oh yeah, you're right. It is late 37. After World War One, after World War Two started. Oh
is
no!
It
wait.
After World War II? No, it's
no 39. 39 is when two starts. Well, if you don't count the Pacific Theater, because if you count the.
It happened during World War II, and the Nazis did try at some point to kind of make, like, military vehicles, and there was a German manufacturer of blimps, and that when it got nationalized, it was meant for, like, propaganda and kind of war reconnaissance, I guess, but for the propaganda thing, they painted the swastikas on one side, and the guy who owned the company obviously didn't like the Nazis. It wasn't enough to, like, protest against it, but just was very annoying. So what they would do is when they would circle around cities, they would circle around with the side of the swastika like facing away from the city. So they would circle the clean side, basically.
Isn't that worse though? Because if you're coming into the city, that's what you see. Okay, we're going on commercial.
Sure.
And we're not going to commercial. Sorry, missed call.
But yeah, it's actually not as bad because the blimp flies high enough and kind of far enough where it's not like going in like a circle around a building. It's more around the entire city. So most of the city doesn't see it, but yeah, I can see like it's not obviously covering it, but it's good enough just piss off the Nazis a little bit, just a little bit.
Just a wee bit. But going back to blimps.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, blimps aren't around because, like the Hindenburg, they're dangerous. I mean, now there are, like, commercial blimps which are a bit more safer. I think they use, I don't know if they use different gases, but just they're built a lot lighter. Like, we have, at the time the Hindenburg was around, like, aluminum was super expensive. So, like, it was very hard to make a blimp, but nowadays things like carbon fiber and other very, very light materials are just used to build them. It's pretty much, it's a lot easier now, but even so, they're just so slow, like, as a mode of transport. They could compete against, like, boats at the time, but for modern day airplanes, they really can't compete, so they're just not used that much because people want to get to, you know, from one place to another in a day, or less than a day, pretty much. And also the accommodations for them, because obviously you have to kind of save weight everywhere you can. The accommodations are not great. I remember it had a grand piano in there, but it was specifically built out of, like, aluminum, and it was, like, the fifth the weight of an actual piano just to fit it on there, because they just stripped everything they could out of it.
That's weird.
Yeah. So, I mean, and yeah, blimps.
Resourceful.
I mean,
it's another word that could be used.
Anything to even allow, like, some more luggage on, pretty much. And yeah, and I guess in Cyberpunk, they're not used especially, but I feel like they're just they're used more like advertising, I guess. Like, I imagine them having, like, screens on the side of them, you know, advertising whatever big corporation or whatever. In Blade Runner, I think they also show up, but doing the same thing pretty much.
In America, how hard is it to get a blimp license? Do you know?
Oh, it's incredibly hard. Oh my god. I think it's not even... Right now, I don't think there's triple digits of blimp pilots, I believe. Like, you know the Goodyear blimp, which is, you know... So, it's iconic. It's not common, because it's very rare. Goodyear doesn't make that balloon anymore. It's another company, which is, like, the one major blimp manufacturer. I don't know what it is.
So in the world, there's a single major blimp manufacturer now, essentially?
Yeah, it's German. It's like Heisen something. And they're the only ones who can really train pilots for blimps. And even that's very scarce. Like, yeah, in the U.S., I don't think there's more than 100 blimp pilots.
They're kind of crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, it's... What's another super rare thing?
I wonder what how much a blimp pilot makes. How much does a blimp...
I guarantee there's more astronauts than there are blimp pilots, like, currently.
Hybrid air vehicles, blimps, cost around $40 million to buy.
Yeah.
Cheaper than an Airbus, but...
I mean, you can get some like, mid-sized airplane that can hold, like, 10, 15 people, and I guarantee it'd be much, much cheaper.
Well, that's the whole thing with, like, private jets.
Yeah, and the thing is, the blimp only holds about as much as a private jet these days, because unless you want to make a giant one, oh my god, I wonder how much that would cost.
According to careersearch.com, blimp pilots can expect to make $25,000 per year. An experienced blimp pilot can make $70,000 per year.
I think that's the difference between part-time blimp pilot and full-time blimp pilots. $70,000 maybe would be full-time, part-time just... Because I feel like a pilot like that would fly Cessnas and stuff would just do blimps on the side. That'd be fun.
Do you want to get a blimp license?
If I got the opportunity to, yes. Because with an airplane, you kind of have to like manage the engine, you know, angle of attack, you know, stall. A blimp is a big balloon. You just kind of sit there and be like, okay, point the balloon downwards or point it upwards or turn left and turn right. It'd be great.
I'm looking on this very bad website. I presume it's very bad. Called careersearch.com.
And it's totally a bunch of,
like, salary information for the weirdest jobs. And one of them is listed as baby-proofing expert.
Baby-proofing expert. I mean...
Take a guess.
Take a guess on what it does?
Average salary.
How much? Ooh, okay. So, this seems like, you know how you have, like, architects and engineers? This is, like, somebody who specifically designs this stuff. So, 50K.
It says... $2,500 per house.
For that much, you just, you know, go to the local Home Depot and just, you know, buy some stuff and just baby-proof the room. Yeah, totally.
$2,500 to baby-proof a room with stuff from Home Depot? No, that's like maybe $100 max. Just
Well, obviously there's a union for it, and then, so you have to do labor costs, and... So I guess it would add up. Look, give them a break, okay? They need this. They went to college for baby proofing, and it didn't pan out as much as they thought it would. And
oh man, when the baby proofing bubble popped,
the baby proofing crash of 2008.
When the housing market crashed, there were no houses to baby-proof. I didn't know what to do. Years at the academy wasted. I'm trying to look for anything else that's, like, crazy on this website. There's a tab called Crazy Careers.
Wait, so you specifically look up Crazy Careers? Or is this... Does this help you, this site help you, like, actually get a job? Or is it just more of, like, showing off different weird jobs?
It's like, I'm filling up my school laptop with tons of, like, I should not be on here.
Wasn't there it was on National Geographic, there was a show which was, like, gross jobs or something like that? Cool. So you might find some of those, I guess.
Are you ready? You want me to go down the list? Tell me when you want to stop and have me read one. First one, airshow pilot.
Okay, that makes sense.
Alligator skinner.
Wait, no. Only a skinner for just alligators? Alligator. You do it all animals.
Alligator skinner.
Does it say tanning as well, or is it just Skinner?
It just says Alligator Skinner. That's all it says. And then there's a link to the page. This is something we have to explore. Career advice and how to become an Alligator Skinner. If you're in the middle of career planning or a job search, please think twice before penciling this one in. One thing is certain, you always want to become an Alligator Skinner by choice, not by necessity. Being cornered by an alligator with only a knife for defense is probably not a good way to earn this title.
So if you successfully defeat an alligator, you just become a Skinner then?
I guess so. Let me read this other gem in the general career information. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Have you ever worn a pair of alligator boots or slid on a simply amazing alligator belt? Well, somebody had to skin that critter, didn't they?
It's not a critter, it's mastiff.
Those alligators don't skin themselves. The alligator skinner does what the alligator cannot do and strips it of its skin. Is the work fun? Well, if the idea of ripping off alligator skin does it for you, then yes, this is fun. Fun job.
Why is this? This sounds like it's written for like fourth graders. Like, oh, this is a cool job. Because, like, you
it
know, the school
is.
Does those.
It probably is.
You know how they do those, like, programs for, like, ooh, here's what your job and career is going to be. Or, and then, like, put here, take the quiz on the computer or whatever. And then everybody gets like, ooh, I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to be an astronaut. Alligator Skinner?
You know what that. Next section is called Career Facts. So what
facts do you need? You skin alligators. That's it.
So that's basically what it says. It starts, what skill or set of skills does one need to be an alligator skinner these days?
Are very difficult for these alligators to not be skinned.
this next line is a real gem. Are you ready?
All right.
If the alligators are supplied to you in dead form, the job is much easier. That was an entire sentence.
So they don't come dead sometimes? So a guy pulls up in the pickup truck and just by the tail, yeah, I need this one skinned.
You still think this website has any ounce of credibility? You know what the average salary section of this one says?
What is it?
It just says don't expect to get rich skinning alligators. That's all it says.
So,
and it says the only career qualifications is a sharp knife and strong stomach.
Oh my god. Is there an about section to this site? I need to know more.
For those of you at home, we're on careersearch.com.
Oh, jeez. Is this, like, an Angel Fire website? Or, like,
I don't know, but it says not secure next to the website name.
I'm sure it's not.
And it looks like it looks like it was made in the early 2000s. However, there's links to, a LinkedIn for it, a Facebook, and a Twitter for it, which doesn't necessarily mean it's new, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's super crazy old. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you see little, like, I don't want to say widgets or little buttons for those, like Facebook, Twitter, and stuff like that?
Yeah, they exist.
So that's around, like, Web 2.0. So that's, like, 2012 around the point where the idea was, like, oh, everything's interconnected now. And then
I can't believe this existed after 2012. Oh
I mean, somebody's still paying for it. That's the big surprising thing.
Are you ready for some more careers?
Yes.
Next one is actually pretty legit audience member, so like extra but more specialized. So.
Oh, okay, okay. I thought this was gonna be like the Have you ever heard of the conspiracy theory of crisis actors? I thought it was gonna be that.
No, I haven't. Please tell us about crisis actors.
Okay, crisis actors, before I continue, are not real. It's a complete conspiracy. But basically the idea is that, like, bad things in the world don't happen, like, school shootings don't happen, other disasters don't happen. It's just actors! And they'll, like, show people, like, oh, this person looks similar to this person in another accident. It must be connected, to push some narrative, I guess. And I actually did a thing for forensics because we had to do like conspiracies because obviously COVID rolled around and the teacher didn't know what to do. So
one second.
All right.
Yeah.
Your girlfriend might have left you. Your tractor might have just been repossessed. But here at WJEB, we'll fill your heart with the finest classic country tunes. Tune in to 101.1.
And we are back with Smooth Sailing on WJEB Radio 101.1 FM. I'm here with Sophia.
Hello.
And right now, we are on a brilliantly awful website, careersearch.com, reading some of the oddest careers that exist. We were, before we left, talking about audience members and a certain conspiracy.
Yeah. Crisis actors. That's what I thought we meant by audience member, because like, where did I leave off with that? I think I just explained the basic premise of it, where it's basically just actors are hired for crises to make them up. And this site, obviously, as unhinged as it was from the alligator skin section, I thought we'd just add that in as a career choice.
Well, you want to know what the day in the life section for audience member says?
Yes.
The professional audience member is often a delusional and unemployed actor who begins his day by calling his agent, in quotation marks, who is always on another call. After that, he or she heads down for a day of clapping and smiling in the background of a television program.
Oh, so this is people in, like, TV shows and stuff. So, because they don't use the laughing track anymore, so, like, yeah.
Yes. But that's really the only thing of note there.
They also have something, they have a real, like, they really don't like somebody. They know somebody who does this and doesn't like them a lot. Like, let's be honest here.
Yeah. That one felt very passive aggressive. Next we have, I'm just gonna go back and forth so I don't have to scroll up and down.
Sure.
So it's in alphabetical order, but the way they have it set up isn't right to left. It's in columns.
Yeah, it's in like three or four columns in alphabetical. Yeah.
Yeah. So the first column is A down to I, and the second one is I down to W, instead of just A left, next highest one on right, which is bad.
Yeah, fandom wikis do that, so, like, for, like, games or something like that, like, if obviously there's no good established wiki, if you want to just find, like, something, it's just like, oh yeah, here, go down the oddly spaced list, it's great.
But some of the other, professional careers that you can have are ice cream truck drivers.
I mean, I guess that you kind of have to train for that profession. I don't know if it's super, like, difficult to do. You just have to learn how to both, you know, do, like, ice cream and drive a truck.
Yeah, which are two fairly common skills.
What do you mean? I went to college, I took a college class for how to scoop ice cream properly. It's not that easy.
But you know what? There are two more ice-related professions next up on the list. The ice resurfacer which I assume is the person who, like, drives around a Zamboni.
Yes, Zamboni, basically, another big truck.
Basically anywhere. So, that feels more like a part-time thing. But that's also legit. That's fairly legit.
Ah, yes, the Zamboni driver, legit on the... Okay.
I mean, compared to Alligator Skinner?
I think at this point, legit is, have you heard of it? It's pretty much...
Okay. I will go into Ice Reserve. The one below that was Ice Sculptor, by the way. Like, a professional ice sculptor.
I thought it was going to be, like, Ice Block Distributor. But I guess kind of Sculptor.
Yeah, no, this is... It even says, reading the career page, it's a part-time job. Yeah, this is a Zamboni driver. I don't know why they called it Ice Resurfacer.
Maybe Zamboni is, like, a brand name?
Maybe. Oh, and the next job is baby-proofing expert. Obviously, we already did that. Then you have knife thrower's assistant.
So you're not even the actual knife thrower. You're just, like, handing the knives?
You are the knife thrower's assistant.
I mean, can't you, like, train under somebody to, like, learn how to throw a knife? Or, like, do, at a guild? Is it a guild? Or apprenticeship? Yeah. Why not that?
What? The average salary section says, whatever the job pays, the knife thrower's assistants will definitely want insurance.
Jesus, okay. Fun.
Oh, this is like the person that gets knives thrown at them for magic shows.
Oh no. Oh. I guess that you would have to actually specifically sign up for that. I don't think there's anybody who's, like an unwilling person who's just like, oh, hey, do you want to do a gig with me? Yeah, sure, what is it? Do you want to be the target being thrown with knives? Oh my gosh.
After that, we have beekeeper. Okay, that's fine. Then we have mall Santa.
Mall Santa, that one's pretty particular, yeah.
You know they have a union, right?
Good.
There's a mall Santa union. It's real.
Absolutely. How do they do a strike? Do they put a Scabby the Rat with like a Santa hat?
I don't know what they did. I don't think. Let me see. I'm gonna look into it. It's the Fraternal Order of Real Bearded Santas, or
Oh,
Forbes.
That's a great name.
It has roughly 800 members, and it handles background checks and insurance.
Cool.
That's weird. And also cool. Then we have Blimp Pilot, which we already went through. Then we have Men's Underwear Designer, which is just fashion designer, so we can skip that.
Yeah, just if you make clothing, you can make underwear.
Then we have Body Piercer, so like tattoo artist sort of thing. That's
mm-hmm,
legit.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Mercenary.
Blackrock or Blackwater wants you to sign up for the second Iraq War.
We're gonna skip Mercenary. It exists. We both know that they do. They're called military.
Absolutely.
They're called military contractors.
Oh my god, a lot of actually the U.S. military runs on contractors, and like recently, to be topical, Biden's pulling out troops at some point from Afghanistan. But the thing is, contractors are still going to stick around.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of the drone pilots are still going to be there. And it's going to be very interesting to see what the U.S. is going to take into account for. Because, like, they count as military troops, like American troops. So, like, they're just going to do war crimes for us.
I have the two weirdest things that we've gone through. Like, these are weirder than Alligator Skinner. Ready for the first one?
Okay. I'm curious to see what's weirder.
Bonfire Builder.
So, wait, like, do you make, like, bowls for bonfires, or do you just...
Day in the life. So who is likely to hire a bonfire builder? The wise guy answer is anyone who wants the big Who Wants a Big Fire for a Party or Get Together? And that is also the right answer. Here's the deal. If you like fires and like building them, then this is a good job for you.
Are you a closeted pyromaniac? Sign up now! Oh, that's great. I don't think you... Once again, I don't think you need a specification for making bonfires. Just make a wooden structure, have a can of gasoline, and a match. You're fine.
This is another one of those pages that is super, like, unprofessional just reading it. But it's nothing too sassy. The next one, however... Ready for this job?
Mm-hmm.
Take a guess. It's a one-word job. Take any guess of the weirdest thing you can think of.
Weirdest job that also is one word. Juggler?
Mermaid.
Mermaid. Why is it one word? You could be, like, a kid's, like, birthday party thing, and then, like, one of the characters is mermaid. Your entire job doesn't revolve around it.
Ready for this entire thing?
Oh, absolutely. Do they have...
Career,
okay.
Career advice on how to become a mermaid.
Step one, have one part human parent, one part fish parent.
Nope. Often career advice on how to become a mermaid is handled out by a psychologist, psychiatrist, or other medical care professional. But as it turns out, there is, in theory, a way one can earn a living as a mermaid. Unfortunately, though, not a merman, as the industry is quite clearly biased.
So the assumption is here is you are actually half fish, half human.
That's the full paragraph. That's the entire section. That's all it says.
Oh my god.
Career facts. You might be having trouble believing that you can make a living as a mermaid, but before you run out and drown yourself, there's more to think of it. If you're in the middle of career planning or job search and you always wanted to be a mermaid, then there might be a way to fulfill this incredibly misguided and kind of creepy wish.
Oh my god, imagine having an ironic death. That's great.
Career opportunities and job look - poor - start in the paragraph.
By the way, are all these, like, sections, like, standardized? Like, this one has, like, a rating.
Yes, but this is the only one with the hyphen poor.
It's a job that's in a class of its own.
No, the mermaid show is in a dying business. Job seekers probably want to look elsewhere for opportunities.
So wait, are you a mermaid, and then this is how you make a job offer of it? Or do you wear, like, a mermaid costume? I'm still confused.
Get ready, you're about to find out.
Oh no.
A day in the life. Swim, wave, and creepy people. Water, rinse, repeat. There are places in the world, scary places, where people can go to see water shows involving women dressed up as mermaids. Now, this isn't some extremely disturbing plot for a horror film, but it is just simply, albeit creepy, fun. If you are still confused, think of synchronized swimming, but with women wearing mermaid flipper costumes. You are getting the idea now. In terms of finding a wildly novel job that will leave friends and family scratching their collective heads, you've hit the jackpot. However, one big problem is the number of opportunities. As you might have guessed, there are not a lot of opportunities for women who want to pretend to be mermaids. In this regard, professional mermaid is a bit of a long shot. To make matters worse, the current mermaid exhibitions in quotation marks aren't faring too well. That's right, kids. In the days before the internet and television, a woman dressed as mermaid was entertainment. You whippersnappers don't know how good you got it. That's it.
Oh. So this is like adult mermaid.
I think so, but I'm very confused because the average salary section says expect to be paid in fishes and the souls of fishermen.
I don't know what to say.
But the qualification is still willingness to put on a mermaid costume and swim around. So I don't know which one it is.
I also love how they do describe the mermaid as dystopian. It's very interesting.
By the way, if any audience members want to comment or say anything, we're open.
Oh, jeez. Is there... Sorry about that. Is there any other jobs on the site, or is it very, very sparse?
Oh, yeah. No, it goes on for quite a bit. I'll just rapid-fire them. Tell me when to stop, okay?
All right.
Bounty hunter. So, already
business
mermaid.
Mercenary.
Yeah. Music. Thanatologist.
Oh, what now?
I don't know either. Time to look up. It means studying music related to death or using music to soothe dying people.
You're the funeral musician.
Yes.
Which, by the way, I went to a funeral a couple years back. I didn't know the family member. It was just like some random person or whatever. And the music they were playing was like, I think it was set up by the guy. Well, no, he died pretty young, but it was just basically just like, it was like Polish pop songs, and it was like five or six songs, so you could like tell they looped. It was very, very odd. Like, then they weren't necessarily like sad or calm. It was just like something you'd hear on the radio. It was great.
Next up on the list is breath odor evaluator, mystery shopper, bush pilot.
Bush pilot. That's like people who do like very short takeoff and landing aircraft, which basically you can just have big engines, big wings. And you just fly around in Alaska and other places where it's just, like, hard to get to, pretty much. That's actually a fun job.
Next on the list is odor tester, which is basically the same thing as odor, breath odor evaluator, carcass collector,
You mean like a hearse driver?
Carcass collector, like animal, like dead animals, I assume.
Oh, interesting.
Then there's owl pellet cleaner, cartoon character impersonator, paparazzo, celebrity ghostwriter, paper towel sniffer.
What? What do you mean? Like after it's been used, or?
They smell paper towels.
For a living?
Yes. Maybe it's a side gig. I'm assuming it's a side gig.
How? Is this, like, paper towel companies, like, hire you to, like, here's the new formulation of paper towel. Make sure it doesn't smell weird.
Yeah. I'm reading about it, and it seems fairly mundane. It's like a side gig for, like, in the same vein as audience member, where it's like, no, you go to Hollywood and you test. It's a product tester, but specifically for paper towels.
But that's not like you say it's part time, but it's still like a job. It's not a one-off thing, right?
Listen, you've heard some of the other things on this list.
I know, I know.
I mean, coming up is drag queen, so...
That's an actual career. Because, like, that takes a lot of effort, let's be honest.
And Cross will... Cross? Okay, we're just gonna fast fire again. Christmas tree farmer, paranormal researcher, citrus fruit dyer, dryer, pet detective,
specific.
Pet detective, competitive eater, insert Guy Fieri joke here.
Wait, hold on, pet detective, that has to be a reference to,
Ace Ventura.
Yeah.
Pet groomer, crocodile wrangler, plastic surgeon, which is a real thing. I don't know why it's on this.
Doctor.
crossword puzzle writer. Polar meteorologist. Dog food tester.
No. Don't tell me that the person eats the dog food.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Private investigator.
Just like, hey, do you like this doggy? And that's it.
I don't know who makes this stuff up.
Like, you know how, like, toothpaste, they have 9 out of 10 doctors? The food should have, like, 9 out of 10 dogs prefer, I don't know, Nutria or whatever.
Product name consultant? Dowser?
No, oh my god, Dowser. They're using dowsing rods, aren't they? Oh my god.
Dowser.
Okay, do you know what... Oh, can you read the
Yeah, I'm reading it.
Okay.
If you want to put Dowser on your career or planning job list, then you better have a good plan for marketing your skills, because this is a dying art. In the olden days, one could be thought of as a witch for dabbling in the fine art of dowsing, but these days, such notions have been dispelled, at least in most countries.
Do you know what dowsing is?
Yes, it's where you try and find water using a stick.
Yeah, the two little sticks, and it's like, ooh, if they go together, that means there's water. I thought, for a moment, I thought maybe it would be like, actually, you just, you know, like, scan the ground for water, but no.
Yeah,
Do dowsing, people who do dowsing have a union as well? I hope
no.
So.
No, and... Nope. Again, these are weird jobs, and the information is, like, so limited. Like, every section's, like, a sentence on this one.
Oh, that's great. I mean, how much can you describe dowsing?
I mean, it says that they're self-employed, so I assume no union.
Darn. They're part of the gig economy. Dang it.
And, yeah, no, there's nothing on here that says much else about dowsing.
Okay.
But you do have your next job, the professional musher.
Is this for, like, stepping on berries and stuff like that?
I imagine this is for, like, dog racing.
Oh, yeah,
dogs are, like...
Mushing, yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's what it is. Then there's drag queen. Then there's professional whistler. Then there's Elvis minister.
What?
Elvis minister?
Brock is a priest?
Yes, you did indeed read that job description correctly. Anyone who's in the process of career planning or a job search can keep an open mind. So how about working as an Elvis minister? If you like religion, like the idea of marrying people, and you find the notion of dressing like possibly the most singly overrated pop icon in history intriguing, I hate this site now, then maybe you have found your career path.
There's no way this is real. There's no, like...
This is... For specifically people in Las Vegas impersonating the king, Elvis, and marrying people.
Now. Yes. Okay, I get it now.
Then you have prosthetist. So, someone that works with prosthetics. Mm-hmm. Executioner.
Oh, hell yeah, that's a career choice.
Rodeo clown?
Yes, rodeo clowns. Oh my god. It's like an old, I don't want to say Texas, but just kind of like southern tradition where you do rodeos and you just have like a clown. I think they also kind of interact with the bulls or whatever, but like, it's very odd, very specific.
That's still less odd than the next one, which is just simply called face viewer.
What?
Simply face viewer.
Is this like a cosmetic spinoff or one of those other, like, you sign up once because there's a weird ad on the newspaper? Or?
Don't dismiss this career option too quickly, for after all, few words bring more pride to a mother's lips than, here is my son, the face viewer.
I still don't understand.
Day in the life section. A face viewer will study the face, looking for any change that has occurred as a result of using a company's new product. If a new razor takes off several layers of skin, for example, one needs to know this thing. It is an odd job, almost definitely, but there are most definitely weirder jobs, and at least all you have to do is feel a face. And if a face viewer ever gets down, all they have to do is remember that at least they are not the guys. Nope.
What? Not reading that next what do you mean?
I'm not reading that next sentence.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It's that bad.
I can't imagine something that could follow up that. What do you mean? Like touching the ass or something?
Nope.
Okay, moving on, I guess.
I'm sorry, but that's one of those words that I don't want my voice saying, so it can be taken out of context. Like, it's that bad.
Oh my god.
Okay, so next one. Sandwich board advertiser?
Isn't it the people that, like, spin the signs?
Probably. Fashion, yeah, that's what it is. Fashion accessories designer, researcher, fire lookout.
Just researcher?
Let me click on it. It might. It's researcher studying extraterrestrial life.
I knew. I was gonna say like, oh, is a researcher for some inane thing? Yes. Because there's nothing regular on this site. Nothing.
Then there's fish processor. Skydiver. Skydiver. And then flatulent smell reduction underwear inventor.
One person can be that. You just invent it. That's it.
Yeah. Smell research technician. Funeral home cosmologist. Sorry.
Ooh, that's a fun job.
Cosmetologist.
Yeah, make the dead people look pretty good so you can have an open casket. That's fun.
Tattoo artist, legit. Taxidermist, also legit. Hair boiler, okay. Helicopter traffic reporter, they exist.
So that's fun.
Historical reenactor, that's more of a hobby. Turtle rescuer, that's... I guess that's a specialty of, like, environmentalists.
I think just animal activist works. Yeah.
Holistic vet.
Video game. Holistic vet. You know what that is, right?
Nope.
Okay, hold on. Let me Google it to make sure, but I think there's a holistic vet around in Milwaukee. Hold on. Basically, a holistic vet is it. Hold on. I'll read it out. It's a in treating an animal, a holistic veterinarian will determine the best combination of both conventional and alternative therapies for a given individual. This is a mixture of healing arts and skills, and is as natural as life itself. Basically, just natural healing, but for your dog. There's one around here. There's I think it's south of here. It's great. Like, my parents are into all, like, the nature stuff, so it's great, yeah. Do it for your dog.
I'm looking at the rest, and there's nothing too out there. I mean, there's one.
Uh-huh.
Human guinea pig.
You could have said that for so many of them! Wait, hold on. What do I mean by human guinea pig? I have to ask.
Like, they're test subjects for studies.
Okay, so you're not being costumed for a guinea pig. Okay. You gotta specify, because the last time they did it was a mermaid.
Yeah, I mean, mermaid was... You want to make a top five? Your top five of the weirdest that we went through today.
Top five. Okay, we obviously started out with Blimp Pilot. I think it's an honorary fifth place. It's just weird enough. Like, it's not common.
Mm-hmm.
Here, mermaid is on there for sure. Audience member, because it was just so like weirdly aggressive towards them. What's another one? How about you state yours while I finish up my list, I guess?
Mermaid is number one, by far. Doesn't come close. Alligator Skinner, number two. Actually, I take that back. Alligator Skinner is not number two. Alligator Skinner is number three. Number two would actually be the bonfire builder. Number four, we're gonna have to go with probably the Elvis Minister. Highly specialized, very odd. And five, I think we're gonna round out with the baby proofing expert.
Honestly, you hit all the good ones. that's perfect.
Honorary mentions go to Mall Santa and Knife Thrower's assistant.
And I do an honorary mention to Blimp Pilot. It's still in my heart, you know?
Oh, wait, I did miss one near the end that's pretty good. Whiskey Ambassador.
What do you mean? Like, you're the ambassador for, like, people, like, for whiskey companies?
Day in the Life section. Every day, you'll be suggesting to others that they should drink whiskey.
You're an alcoholic. That's what it is.
Oh my god. A career as a whiskey ambassador does sound like something that originated in the delusional, intoxicated dream of an alcoholic.
I don't know about you, but I think the web creator is projecting a bit here.
Certainly. I take it back. Whiskey Ambassador number five. Goodbye, baby proofing expert.
Should we link this site in the Discord to like come back to if anybody else wants to check it out?
Yes, I'll link it, but I think we went through basically all that we need.
I think just to look at it kind of like a museum piece, you know?
Yeah. So that's it. How did we even get here? How did we even get on this conversation? We were talking
cyberpunk,
about blimps.
Cyberpunk to blimps to the blimp pilots. I think a majority of the show has just been the career thing. Oh, this is great.
So, you said your parents were into animals a lot? Animal
rights? No, not animals, just the natural healing and stuff like that.
Ah.
Not as interesting.
Are you into animals, though?
I would love to have a pet. Like, I've had a couple pets before, but they all end kind of tragically. I'll go from least tragic to most tragic.
Okay.
So we had ferrets, and they were scared of them, like, eating out of the cages, so we got rid of them at some point. I love the ferrets, though. I had I don't know which one's more gruesome, but I had a fish, two fish, which jumped out of its own fishbowl, and I had a, and the sad part, I had a cat that had, like, stomach cancer, and, so, yeah. So yeah, I have had a bad run with pets, but I still want like a cat or something, or a bird, honestly. I want a pet so bad.
What about tortoise? I had a tortoise that ran away.
How did it run away? Where'd it go?
My grandparents went to it. We left it over at my grandparents so that they could watch it for the evening. They went to a bar, forgot about it for 6 hours, came back, and it was gone. The tortoise ran away.
You would hope it didn't go that far.
We searched like a mile. We got like the entire that side of the town I live in to look for it, and no one could find it.
Was the turtle like outside?
Yeah, the tortoise was outside.
Oh, okay. I thought it was like indoors in like a tank. I was like, how did it leave so fast?
No, and here's the thing about tortoises. They move like 2 miles per hour.
I mean, that's still pretty good. Oh, wait, yeah, that's a bit faster. Yeah. And they also blend in. They have, like, natural camouflage.
Yeah. Oh, no, I take that back. They can go up to 2 miles per hour. They go at 0.62 miles per hour.
Oh. fun. So, yeah, really didn't go that far, but...
No. Probably not. We never found it, like we said, but they do burrow.
Yeah, it could have been, or like, is there, like, a children's animal that's, or a cartoon that's a turtle? Franklin, I guess?
Franklin?
I was gonna make a joke there or something. I was gonna make a joke that they joined a cartoon or whatever. Moving on, I guess.
I remember, I think I know what you're talking about. I think the show is called Franklin. And
yeah, it's a turtle with, like, a backpack and a bandana. I think it's, like, the big feature.
There was that YouTube channel that used to make really cursed, like, animations about children's shows, and I can't remember what it was called, but there was one where it was Franklin.
Was it, like, YouTube poops, or?
Sort of. I know that there was... I don't want to talk about it here. It's really bad.
That's fair.
I will find the channel, though.
Do you know the channel from, like, your childhood?
Oh, Cyber-Aid.
Cyber-Aid.
Oh. Yeah, there were a lot of bad ones. Like, they all, like, devolve into just the most horrendous, like... What's that Garfield subreddit?
What's it called?
That my friends always used to talk about.
I'm sorry, John, or something like that?
I'm sorry, John. Yes. Yeah. It's like if I'm sorry, John had animations. That's what it is.
Huh. Cool. Did you learn about this channel, like, recently, or, like,
as No, my friend Nico Garrity once told me about it years ago. And, I'm only bringing it up now. Just, I don't know why I'm bringing it up. Somehow we got on we were talking about Franklin.
We're unlocking the deep recesses in your mind.
The only thing about Franklin I remember is I was in the pre-diagnosis days where my entire memory is just kind of a fever dream of one event to the next. I remember there being a Franklin movie at some point.
I think you might have to fact check me on this, but isn't the person who wrote Franklin the same person who wrote the Hunger Games series? It's Suzanne Collins, I think?
If you're right about this, I'm going to flip. Are you right? No.
So what did she write?
The person who wrote the Franklin stuff was Brenda Clark and Paulette Bourgeois.
Oh. Hmm. I'm actually looking at Suzanne Collins, and she only has, like, young adult books. Then what was the one book? There was, like, I swear, there was, like, a children's book. Huh. I'm just remembering. Hmm. Interesting.
The Hunger Games got bad after the first book.
Yeah. And the movies are very interesting, to say the least.
You know what's sad? You remember Divergent, right? Like, the kind of knockoff Hunger Games?
Yeah, that was a big thing at my school. Never read it, though.
They
they were awful, and anyone you talk to will tell you they're awful, because Hunger Games was already borderline not good.
Yeah.
A knockoff version of Hunger Games was just straight outright bad. Like, trash.
See, I never read the book, but I remember the movie being a lot on TV. So, like, I do remember the movie, and it's also garbage. It's really bad.
Yeah.
Do you have any? Do you have any other like childhood books you remember? Or
Go Dog Go, which has become a Netflix show, and I'm very sad.
I'm assuming it's like a children's show, right?
Yes. Are you aware of the book Go Dog Go?
No, not at all.
By P.D. Eastman. All of these dogs are in cars, right? And they're all trying to get to a party, and that's the entire plot of the book. And it's a party in a massive, like, fantasy world tree. I'm not making this up.
Okay, I remember seeing this book, maybe at a library as a young kid, and I see the Netflix show. I thought this was, like, a Dr. Seuss book. Oh, it has the Dr. Seuss stamp.
It has the Dr. Seuss...
The same series, I guess.
It's like a childhood book, but it's not a Dr. Seuss book, if you understand what I mean.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Interesting.
I think it's more the memories of, like, reading it with my dad more than actually, like...
The book itself.
Because the real... Okay, I almost stopped reading entirely. I didn't read a book for, like, 2 years when I was in elementary school. Like, from the middle of first grade to the middle of third grade, didn't read a single book. And you want to know why?
Why?
I was reading the Magic Treehouse series in order. Like, book one, then book two.
I mean, that's still a reading.
I was reading it until I got to number 8, right? And it was something about the moon, and I'll always remember this. And there was a moon unit in first grade. And they said, oh, you can't read that because you're going to read that later in the year. So I just stopped reading because I figured, okay, this is the next book I'm going to read, and I'm going to read it later on in the year. But we never
and
read
it.
It
didn't happen, yeah.
And by that point, I was just so upset and angry that I couldn't read this book and didn't know where to go next. And not only my teacher didn't let me read it, but my parents also kind of stopped me from reading it when I told them what happened. And I was like, I'm just not going to read. And so I didn't read for 3 years.
Out of spite for Treehouse, was it Treehouse Chronicles, something like that?
Magic Treehouse.
Magic Treehouse, yeah, there you go.
And then, from not reading all that time, I went straight into reading literal Greek myths. Not Percy Jackson. I thought, so I had this stupid idea as a child. In order to understand Percy Jackson, I had to understand Greek myths. So I started reading.
Homer.
Not Homer. Real nonfiction, like, biographies of these, like, sorry, nonfiction, like, articles for these myths, like, anthologies, essentially, for Greek myths. Like, nonfiction books is how I got back into reading.
So let me, the timeline is, first grade, you were reading Magic Treehouse, couldn't read it. Second, third grade, you stopped reading?
Well, sort of. Video games is what kept my literacy up. Oh, JRPGs. I'm not making that up. The only reason I can probably read right now is RPG games. I really wish I was kidding. But no, that's true.
That's amazing.
And then,
see, whenever you read a book, you like press down with your right thumb sometimes, just out of like out of instinct. So yeah, so you went from not reading or reading JRPGs to
break.
You are listening to 101.1 FM. WJEB. We are Milwaukee's classic country station and the world's first Discord bot powered broadcast radio station. Join our Discord server at wjeb.cf to talk with us or request your favorite songs.
Hello? Are we good?
Yep.
Sophie, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. We're back.
Okay, yeah. Back to the reading thing.
So yeah, so you went from Magic-free house to not reading to allusions to Greek mythology in modern day. It's great. It's just you read an analysis book on Greek mythology.
No. It was like a non-fiction like compilation of Greek myths. So it was like, this is the story of Perseus, but very simplified.
Huh.
This is the story of Icarus, but very simplified. And by very simplified, I mean like in like 10-20 pages.
So you like read the Wikipedia essentially?
Yes, I essentially read my into reading again was essentially Wikipedia nonfiction articles about Greek myths, which fits me because I practically only read nonfiction.
Do you read Wikipedia a lot?
I go on binges, but I don't frequent it. Like, if you know what I mean, like. Once I get started, it's all I'll do for a day, but I don't frequent it because I know it's addictive and I won't be able to put it down.
It honestly is. Have you ever heard of wiki races?
Yes.
Oh my god, I love doing wiki races. It's so much fun.
Have you ever heard of WikiHow?
Yes, I have heard of WikiHow. It's great.
It's fantastic. Very.
Shout out to the animators or illustrators, you know?
Yeah. And then I went from Greek myths to The Hobbit, Lord of the Rings.
That makes sense to follow up. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I did, as a kid, try to read the Lord of the Rings. I like got through like the first couple chapters and just never got around to it.
It's rough. Fellowship of the Ring is the roughest one to get through. By far. Hobbit, you can just fly through in, like, a day. Like, it's a children's book, essentially.
Yeah.
Fellowship is, like, the textbook guide on how to world build. And because of that, it's very hard to read.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, the middle section when the Fellowship is forming. The Council of Elrond is, like, two chapters, and it's rough. It's a really rough lore.
Is it more like, I have a thing where I kind of divide up storytelling in, like, two categories. One is, like, you have characters, and they you have a plan for them to kind of have arcs, or, like, how they're going to develop, or how they're going to face challenges. And another is just, like, autobiographical, where it's just, like, this thing happens, and this thing happens, and this thing happens. Whereas more of you're reciting, like, a lore of a world. Is that how it's written?
It was the biographical thing, except they would just name drop characters and not really explain too well what they did.
Ah, fun.
They would explain some characters, but the problem is a lot of the characters in Lord of the Rings and many fantasy worlds are meant to have. Okay, so modern fantasy comes from Tolkien, period. Like, I don't think anyone's gonna really dispute that.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And Tolkien was first and foremost a language professor and a very well-accredited English professor at Oxford, first and foremost, before being an author. And then...
Sorry, I have a weird button question. Do they make their own languages, like, that are written in the book?
Oh, yeah. I looked into Tolkien's languages. They're insane. No, they're real functioning languages that you can learn. Fully. Like, I mean, it's frankly insane what Tolkien did with languages.
Yeah, I find that actually, like, not English, but not all of them, right? But, like, people who are, like, have a hobby in, like, English and stuff like that will, like, try to, not try to make languages, but just Because you've heard of, like, conlings and stuff like that, right?
Well, no, what he did is he went into the old English text of Beowulf and the old folk legends of basically any Norwegian mythology that he could find, including their languages, and created language modifications for, like, every fantasy race you could think of.
Huh, so you, like, reskin it for the different, like, races. That's interesting.
Yeah, I remember reading something. He had, like, 13 languages he made by the time the books were published.
Huh.
Like, fully functional languages with alphabets.
Now, here's the question. Are they any good?
I'm not sure. That's something I've never looked into. I know how many he made, but I've never looked at critiques of the languages.
Because I'm only saying this because I have a friend and who's interested in it, and they said that, like, Skyrim, the dragon's language, is really not that great. Because, like, there's a word for boat in dragon. What purpose? Dragons don't make boats. They would instead call it something else, like land something or water something. But, like, so yeah, the Skyrim is pretty inconsistent, I've heard. It's not great. But I think Tolkien might be decent.
Reception and study. I'm on Wikipedia now. Oh my god. There is a book that was published in 1978 called An Introduction to Elvish.
Oh, wait. Is it like, can you speak it like Klingon? Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, but he did this for... I'm going down the list. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, and ten. No, 13. Yeah,
so,
no, 13.
Did he write
and I know I skipped a couple at the end. Like, 13 languages of sort, but there are, really, it's a lot less, but he made, like, early languages, and then the mid style of the language, and then the light style of the language.
So he made a history to the languages as well. Oh my gosh.
Yes. Tolkien was a literal genius. Like,
huh.
He's crazy. He was an Oxford grad, and he was an Oxford professor for most of his life. So,
cool.
Yeah.
No wonder they took inspiration to D&D. And that's our segue back to tabletop. Yes, got it.
For the last 8 minutes. How many editions of D&D have you played?
I actually have only played 5th edition, but I learned a little bit of 4th because I brought this up a lot earlier. There was a webcomic which I got into called Will Save World for Gold. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Nope.
I think it's still ongoing. It's just a 4th edition D&D webcomic. That's about it. It's really good. It's pretty good, though. I remember the plot being all right.
I have a fascination with... I know it's not exactly a webcomic, but green text D&D stories.
Oh, that's close enough.
Like, Old Man Henderson, which is the famous Call of Cthulhu one that almost everyone knows about. Do you know about Henderson?
I remember you sent me the link for it, but I haven't watched it yet. So.
Henderson was so bad that there's something called the Henderson scale of plot derailment now, which is how bad can you ruin your DM's game, essentially.
Okay.
Because what Henderson did is he managed to it wasn't Cthulhu who he managed to kill an eldritch god. In an
Cthulhu,
ice hockey
Cthulhu,
right? Arena. In Call of Cthulhu, but I don't know what Eldritch God it was.
Okay.
So here's the scale. Hold on 1 second. This might be the end.
Go ahead.
This one is hit, by the way. Oh. Sophia.
Yes?
I'm back. Sorry, that didn't take as long as I thought it would. So last thing for tonight, we'll go through the Henderson scale of plot derailment, which I'll paste a link to.
Oh, cool.
-9 Henderson's. The action taken has solved every game's universe for every living thing and non-living thing in existence.
Oh, this scale goes from 2 to 0 to -2, and then it skips immediately to -9. Huh.
Yeah. Henderson himself was a quote-unquote... Okay, so first of all, his character motivation for being involved in the story was he thought the cultists stole his collection worth $65,000 worth of lawn gnomes.
That's a lot of gnomes. I mean...
He was a quote-unquote Vietnam vet, but he would have been 6 if he was in Vietnam, based on his age. He had a 300-page backstory.
No.
Which
no,
switched languages.
You're kidding, right?
Midway. No, I'm not kidding. Well, here's the thing. Supposedly had. It's been lost.
Okay. Damn. I would love to read it.
Everyone would, but that's the one thing about Henderson. I don't think it exists because the backstory doesn't really exist.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great idea for a premise, though. Yeah. Also, the lawn gnomes I mentioned, they weren't actually stolen. He sold them in a charity auction when he was drunk, so his entire involvement was just not important to the plot.
Circumstantial. Gotta love it.
But yeah, it's about time for the end of the show, unfortunately.
Well, that's fun. I enjoyed it. It was really fun.
Yeah, this was a fun one. Thanks for being on.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks, listeners, both present and in the future, but not in the past. For listening to Smooth Sailing this week. This has been Smooth Sailing on WJAB Radio 101.1 FM. We are now going to play you out with a ending song, which I do not know the name of. I forgot what the ending song was. It's been so long.
The first light.